Maybe give me your home number?
Faith bit her lip so that she wouldn't say anything back. His lack of compassion was galling. She wanted to remind him that Emma Campana was still missing, possibly dead, that a boy who was his age and in his school, someone who had slept less than 10 feet from him, had been brutally murdered, and that a killer was still at large. Instead, she got up and walked across the room, making herself pull the door to, gently, so as not to give him the satisfaction. She kept her hand on the closed door, willing herself to calm down. Victor and his secretary were watching her expectantly. She wanted to rail against the kid, to curse him for being such a heartless bastard, but she didn't. It was a bit early in their relationship for Victor to see her bitchy side. So, he stood with his hands in his pockets, his usual smile on his face. Was he useful?
As much as a bag of hair, she told him. An idea occurred to her. Did you search his room?
What for?
Faith had thought it inconsequential at the time, but now, she said, for the pot I found in his sock drawer when I was searching Gabe Cohen's things last night.
Victor's smile widened. Marty, if you could have campus security check into that?
Certainly.
The secretary picked up the phone, giving Faith a look of approval. Victor told Faith, we have a strict policy on drugs, automatic expulsion.
I think that might be the best news I've heard all day.
Here's some more. Chuck Wilson called back. He says he's got a pretty good guess on what your substance is. He's across the street at the varsity if you want to go over and find him.
Faith felt a flash of heat in her face. She had put the stolen evidence in the back of her mind, treating it as an intangible thing. But now there was no turning away from what she had done.
Faith?
Great.
She made herself smile. He opened his office door. Are you sure you can't grab a quick bite? I know that fast food isn't very romantic. If Victor wasn't ready to see her bitchy side, he certainly didn't need to watch her wolfing down a chili steak sideways with a PC.
I appreciate the invitation, but I've got to meet my partner on this case.
How's it going? He asked, leading her to the building lobby and outside. Any luck?
Some,
she admitted, but wasn't more specific than that. Evan Bernard's arrest didn't feel like an accomplishment when they still had no idea where Emma Campana was. It must be hard for you, he said, squinting in the sun as they walked past the football stadium. Large brick buildings were opposite, more student housing.
The not knowing is hard, she admitted. I keep thinking about the girl. What it must feel like for her parents.
He pressed his hand to the small of her back, indicating a one-way street on the right. Faith took the turn, and he continued talking. I've dealt with a lot of students' problems over the years, but nothing like this. The whole campus feels tense. I can't imagine what it's like at the girls' school. We've lost students before, but never to violence. Faith was quiet, listening to the soothing sound of his voice, enjoying the sensation of his touch through her thin cotton blouse. This way, Victor said, indicating where the sidewalk narrowed. A tall iron railing cut into the sidewalk, the ground sloping downward. Faith stopped. They were about 2 blocks from the North Avenue bridge that crossed I-75 and led to the varsity.
What's this?
You never used the tunnel before? Victor asked. She shook her head and he explained, it's a shortcut under the interstate. I wouldn't use it in the middle of the night, but it's perfectly safe now. He took her hand as if to assure her, as if she didn't have a gun on her hip and the ability to use it. He continued playing the part of tour guide as they walked. The varsity was founded by a tech student by the name of Frank Gordy. He opened it mainly to service the school, but that's changed quite a bit over the years. We try not to let our students know Gordy dropped out of school in 1925 to start the restaurant. Between Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, it's hard enough to convince technology majors that there's actually a reason to complete your degree.
You know I can't say anything, Faith commented. She'd told him last night that she had dropped out of college a year from graduating.
Jeremy had inherited her love of math, and seeing him get his degree was more than enough. Victor reminded, "Tech has a wonderful adult enrollment program."
"I'll keep that in mind," she answered, humoring him. "You didn't need trigonometry to arrest a vagrant for public intoxication." They were inside the tunnel, but Victor didn't move his hand from her back. Above, Faith could hear the rumble of traffic passing over their heads. She wondered how many tech engineers had worked on the highway project and whether or not the city planners had known about the secret passageway. The tunnel was large, about 12 feet wide, and at least 20 yards long. The ceiling was low, and though Faith wasn't normally the type, she felt a bit claustrophobic. Victor continued, "I'm sure you know that the Varsity is the largest drive-in fast food restaurant in the world. It covers 2 city blocks. This tunnel comes out on the north side of the building at 3rd Street. I don't remember this part of the tour when Jeremy visited the campus. It's a well-kept secret. You should see this place during football games. It's wall to wall." Faith felt herself sweating, even though it was cooler underground. Her heart started pounding for no reason, and no matter how far they walked, the stairs lining the tunnel exit seemed to get farther away.
"Hey," he sounded concerned, "you okay?"
She nodded her head, feeling silly. She realized she was clutching the envelope and slipped out the pictures to make sure she hadn't creased them. When she looked up at Victor, she felt her panic from a few moments before start to return. His face was hard, angry. She asked, "What is it?" He glared at her, his fury almost tangible. "What are you doing with pictures of Evan Bernard?" "How do you..." He quickly closed the space between them, grabbing her right arm. His grip was tight. He was left-handed. Why hadn't she noticed that before? "Victor," she breathed, panic taking hold.
"Tell me what you know," he demanded. "Tell me right now."
Faith felt her right arm go numb where Victor was grabbing her.
"What are you talking about?" she asked, her heart beating hard enough to hurt.
He pressed. "Was this some kind of sting operation?"
"To catch you doing what?"
"I have no connection to that man. You tell them that."
"You're hurting me."
Victor let go of her. He looked down at her bare arm, the mark he had made.
"I'm sorry,"
he said, walking back to his side of the tunnel. He ran his fingers through his hair, pacing nervously.
"I don't know Evan Bernard. I had no idea what he was doing. I never saw him with students. I never even saw him on campus."
She rubbed her arm, trying to get the feeling back.
"Victor, what the hell are you talking about?"
Victor put his hands in his pockets, rocked back on his heels.
"Just tell me, Faith. Does this mean anything to you, or are you investigating me?"
"For what? What did you do?"
"I didn't do anything. That's what I'm trying to tell you."
He shook his head.
"I really liked you. And this was all some kind of game, wasn't it?"
"Game?" she demanded. "I've spent the last 3 days trying to find the sick fuck who killed 2 people and abducted another to do God knows what to her. You think this is some sort of game?"
"Faith,
no,"
she snapped.
"You don't get to sound like the reasonable one here. Tell me exactly what's going on, Victor, starting with your connection to Evan Bernard."
"He's been a part-time tutor for over 20 years. Our students aren't exactly well-versed in liberal arts. He helped them with their coursework."
"Was Adam Humphrey one of his students?"
"No, we fired Bernard last year. He taught remedial classes during summer term. We found out he was having an affair with a student. Several students. He's suing us. He's suing me for wrongful termination."
"Why you personally?"
"Because the program fell under student services. Bernard's suing anyone who was remotely connected with the tutoring program. He lost his state pension, his benefits, his retirement."
"It's illegal for him to have sex with students."
"Not unless you catch him red-handed," he countered in disgust. "None of the girls would testify against him."
"Then how did you find out?"
"One of them came forward. He was pretty rough with her. There was some kind of fight and she got hurt. She didn't come to us until a few weeks later. I tried to get her to go to the police, but she wouldn't. Her word against his, right?
She was scared of being paraded in front of the media. She was scared of being ostracized by the campus.
His lips went into a thin line.
It's disgusting enough that it happened. But for him to sue us. Why isn't this public knowledge? Because he wants money, not headlines. And the university sure as hell isn't going to call up CNN and give them the scoop. It's only about the money, Faith. That's all it ever boils down to.
He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
He teaches at a high school. Did you know that? The lawyers told us not to contact them. He could sue us for slander. It's not slander if you're telling the truth. That's a high-minded attitude when you're not looking at $50,000 in legal bills to defend yourself against a bastard you've never even met.
He crossed his arms over his chest.
I'm sorry, Faith. I saw the photos, and I thought they sent you to get me. It's not a criminal case.
I know that, he said.
I'm just so...
He shook his head, leaving her to fill in the blanks.
I'm paranoid. I worked damn hard to get where I am, and I don't want to lose my job and my house because of some asshole who can't keep his dick in his pocket.
He shook his head again.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't use that kind of language. I shouldn't have grabbed you either. I'm under a tremendous amount of stress. That's not an excuse, I know that.
Why didn't you tell me about this before? We spent the night together talking about everything but this.
For the same reason you didn't talk about your case. It was nice to just talk to a human being about normal stuff. I've been dealing with this lawsuit all summer. I just wanted somebody who sees me as Victor the nice guy, not the administrator who's being sued because students got poached on his watch.
Faith wrapped her arms around her waist. Frustration building to the boiling point. Emma Campano had been abducted by a madman. How many more people had been standing idly by while the girl was being brutalized? Her friends were being killed.
You have no idea what you've done. He tried to respond, and she shook her head. This man could be connected to my case, Victor. He was sleeping with one of the girls who died. His sperm was found inside her body.
His mouth opened in shock.
What are you saying?
That Evan Bernard is a suspect in our case.
He kidnapped that girl? He killed...
Victor seemed truly horrified by the prospect. She was so angry that she felt tears come into her eyes.
We don't know, but if you'd shared this information with me 2 days ago, you might have spared another girl from...
Footsteps echoed in the tunnel. Faith shielded her eyes from the harsh lights and made out a round figure making its way toward them. As the man got closer, she could see that he was wearing shorts, a T-shirt, and a white lab coat that was stained with ketchup.
Chuck,
Victor said, his voice strained as he tried to get back his composure. He reached toward Faith, but she shrugged him off. He still managed introductions.
This is Faith Mitchell. We were just coming to find you.
By way of greeting, Chuck said,
Shakrit.
Faith asked,
Sorry? Your gray powder is shakrit. It's a high-density concrete that's reinforced with titanium fibers.
What's it used for?
Retaining walls, wine cellars, skateboard parks, swimming pools.
He glanced around.
Tunnels.
Like this one?
This baby's old, he said, patting the low ceiling. Besides, I found granite in the mix.
Like Stone Mountain? She asked, referencing a mountain that was several miles outside the city.
That particular granite is known for its clusters of tourmaline, which aren't common to other granites. I'm no igneous petrologist, but my guess is that it's our trusty 300-million-year-old Atlanta bedrock.
She tried to put him back on point. So it came from a tunnel in the city?
I'd say a construction site.
What kind?
Any kind, really. Shotcrete's sprayed on the walls, the ceiling, to hold back soil.
Would it be used in water main construction, fixing lines under the road?
Almost exclusively, as a matter of fact.
There was more, but Faith was running too fast to hear him. Chapter 18. Will repeated his question. What does the concrete powder look like?
Like you'd expect, Petty answered, indicating the glass door Will had just walked through.
He could see it now, light gray footprints across the blue carpet. Will glanced around the room, the furiously working copiers, the empty storefront. Anyone who had been in the copyright or the parking lot could have tracked through the concrete dust and deposited it anywhere. But only one of them was holding a knife that matched the one used to kill Kayla Alexander and Adam Humphrey. He asked Petty, "Are you the only one here?" The man nodded, chewing another bite of steak. "Warren should be back soon. He's out making a delivery." "He has a van?" "Nah, it's just down the street. We walk over the deliveries sometimes. It kind of breaks the monotony." Outside, the jackhammer kicked in, the vibrations so hard that Will could feel the floor shaking under his feet. Will raised his voice, asking, "Do you ever make deliveries?" He shrugged. "Sometimes." "What?" Will asked, though he had heard the man well enough. "I can't hear you over the jackhammer." "I said sometimes." Will shook his head, pretending he still couldn't hear. This wasn't going to be like Evan Bernard. Will would not leave this building without a suspect in handcuffs and a solid case to back the arrest. Petty had the knife, he had the opportunity, and he certainly had the motive. What better way to end his illustrious career at the copyright than to retire with $1 million cold hard cash in his pocket? Having Emma Campano in the process would be icing on the cake. Was that enough, though? Was this pathetic pothead the kind of man who could beat a girl to death and take another away for his own pleasure? Faith had said she'd be the ruler of the world if she could spot a killer from 100 paces. Was Lionel Petty someone who hid murder in his heart, or was he just caught up in something bad, the wrong place at the wrong time? Either way, Will wanted to get Petty away from the exit and in an enclosed space where he could talk to him. He especially wanted him to put down the knife. He told the man, "I still can't hear you." Petty cupped his hands to his mouth, making a joke of it. "Sometimes I make deliveries." Will knew the office was in back of the room. He guessed that all the paperwork would be kept there. He yelled to Petty, "I need to see who you delivered to." Petty nodded, dropping the knife and standing up. He started to leave, then changed his mind. Will reached around to his paddle holster as Petty's fingers moved toward the knife, but the man only scooped up a handful of French fries. He ate them as he led Will to the back of the store. At the door to the office, he pulled out a ring of keys. Will asked, "Does Warren always leave those with you?"
"Never, man."
He jammed a key into the lock, pushed open the door, and sat down in front of the desk. The noise was somewhat buffered in the small room, and Petty spoke in a normal tone.
"Warren forgot his keys last night. I don't know what's up with him. He keeps forgetting things."
He opened a desk drawer and started to riffle the files.
"It's hilarious because he really hates to fuck up."
Will stood in the doorway, feeling the breeze of the air conditioning freeze the sweat on his back, gluing his shirt and vest together. He leaned into the doorframe, reaching his hand around to his back, finding his gun snugly tucked into the paddle holster. Petty mumbled to himself as he searched the files.
"Sorry, man, Warren has his own system for filing things."
"Take your time," Will said. He looked at the CDs lining the walls, the way the colored jewel cases were stacked together in their own particular order. It reminded him of his own CD collection at home, the way he identified certain albums not by their words but by their colors, their recording logos, their artwork. Will felt a prickling sensation work its way up his spine. "What about the customer files on the shelves? Does Warren have a system for those, too?"
"The CDs?" Petty laughed. "Shit, man, I can't even begin to tell you how he's got those filed. I'm not even allowed to touch them."
"But Warren knows where everything is, right?"
"He can find it with his eyes closed."
Will doubted that. Warren would need to see the colors, the patterns, before he could find the disc he needed. "Were you working here the day Emma was abducted?"
"I was off, man. Total headache."
"Is Warren left-handed?" Petty held up his hand in response. Will couldn't tell which one it was. Discerning between left and right was something his brain couldn't easily manage.
"Here we go," Petty said, pulling out a file. "Ignore the typos. Warren's such a freak-tard, he's like incapable of spelling anything, but he won't admit it."
What do you mean? Will asked, though he already knew the answer. Warren color-coded the CDs, relying on visual cues to help him find the right file. The evidence had been staring Will in the face the first time he'd come into the manager's office to look at the security tape. Warren used the color-coding system for the same reason as Will. He couldn't read. Petty said,
Warren's all right most of the time, but the dude won't admit he's wrong about anything. It's like working in the fucking White House around here.
I meant the typos. You said he can't spell. What do you mean? Petty shrugged, handing him a sheet of paper.
Like that, man. I mean, it's like he's in kindergarten, right?
Will glanced down at the sheet. His stomach roiled. He couldn't see anything but lines.
Wait till you see this.
Petty opened another drawer, and between the hanging files, Will saw several knives, like the one Petty had been gripping.
Where did you get those?
Petty leaned down, stretching his hand to the back of the drawer.
The cafeteria down the street. Are you going to report us?
Warren steals them, too.
We both do, man. The steakery only gives you those cheap-ass plastic knives.
He sat up, holding a book in his lap.
I'll take him back, dude. I know it's stealing.
Will motioned toward the book. Let me have that. Petty handed it over.
Pathetic, man. He's always acting like he's perfect, right? That he's some kind of mental genius, and then he sneaks in with this? Classic Warren. What a loser.
Will stared at the front cover. He couldn't read the title, but he instantly recognized the multicolored triangles and squares. Evan Bernard had shown him a similar book this morning. It was the same kind that Emma Campano used.
Open it up, Petty said. See Spot Run. See Jill Wet Her Pants. I mean, it's like a book for retarded one-year-olds. Cracks me up, man.
Will didn't open the book.
Where did he get this?
Petty shrugged, leaning back in the chair.
I go through his stuff sometimes when I get bored. I found it shoved in the back of the drawer about 2 weeks ago.
He didn't seem ashamed of the habit, but he offered another piece of information to redeem himself.
Warren's got these weekly reports that he's supposed to send to corporate. I go through his computer and make it look less like a moron did it.
He doesn't use spell check?
Dude, spell check is not Warren's friend.
There was no computer on his desk.
Where's his computer? He used to keep it here, but lately he's been carrying it with him in his briefcase.
He pumped his fist up and down suggestively.
Probably trolling porn on the wireless we pick up from the coffee shop.
What kind of computer is it?
Mac. Pretty sweet.
Does he have a car?
He hoofs it.
He lives close by?
Not far. He takes Marta.
Petty finally got suspicious.
Why are you asking all these questions about Warren, man?
Will thumbed through the book. The pages fell open to the center, where someone had used a plastic laminated card to mark the page. Will looked at the card, saw Adam Humphrey's picture. There was a buzzing sound. Petty turned around in the chair to squint up at the security cameras. He pressed a button on the desk, saying,
"Speak of the devil."
Will watched the monitor as Warren Greer opened the glass door out in the parking deck. "Stay here," he told Petty. "Lock the door and call 911. Tell them that an officer needs immediate assistance." Petty sat frozen in his chair, and Will told him, "I'm not fooling around, Lionel. Do it." Will pulled the door closed behind him. The jackhammer had stopped, but the copiers were still running, the clack of papers humming in his ears. Will was at the counter by the time Warren made his way to the front. The man was wearing his blue copyright shirt and carrying a beat-up brown briefcase in his hand. He was understandably alarmed to see Will standing behind the counter. Warren asked,
"Where's Patty?"
"Bathroom," Will told him. Warren was on the other side of the counter, just a few feet away. Will could have reached out and grabbed him by the collar, yanked him over the counter without missing a beat. "I told him I'd catch the phones for him." Warren glanced down at Petty's lunch, the knife.
"Is everything okay?"
"I'm here to show you guys some photos." Will reached into his jacket pocket
and pulled out the yearbook pages, hoping the fact that his heart was about to beat out of his chest was not as evident as it felt. He fanned out the photos, so that Kayla was in front, half of Evan Bernard's face obscured behind her. "Do you mind taking a look at these for me?" Slowly, Warren put his briefcase on the floor. He stared at the pictures a good while before he took them.
"I've seen this girl on the news," he said,
his tone of voice a few octaves higher than normal.
"She's the one who was stabbed, right?"
"Beaten," Will corrected, leaning down on the counter so he could get closer to Warren. "Someone beat her to death with his fists." There was a slight tremble to the young man's hand, a nervousness that Will shared. The photo of Bernard was still visible, and Warren moved his fingers to cover it with Kayla's image.
"I thought she was stabbed."
"No," Will said. "The boy was stabbed, just once in the chest. His lung collapsed."
"The mother didn't kill him?"
"No," Will lied. "He died from the knife wound. We got the coroner's report this morning," he added. "It's sad, really. I think he just got in the way. I think whoever killed him was just trying to keep him away from Emma." Warren kept staring at the photo of Kayla Alexander. "Kayla wasn't raped," Will told him, trying to imagine Warren Greer in a fury, straddling Kayla Alexander, plunging the knife into her chest over and over again. Adam Humphrey would have been next, a single stab wound to the chest. And then Emma. What had he done to Emma? Will said, "We don't think the killer is that kind of person."
"You don't?"
"No," Will said. "We think whoever killed Kayla just got angry. Maybe she said something to him, goaded him into it. She wasn't a very nice person." He still stared at the photo. "I could guess that from looking at her. She could be very cruel." He nodded. "The other man," Will began, fanning out the pictures so that Evan Bernard was fully visible. "We've arrested him for raping Kayla." Warren didn't respond. "His sperm was inside her. He must have had sex with her right before she went to see Emma Campano." Warren kept his eyes on the photos. "We just want her back, Warren. We just want to return Emma to her family." He licked his lips, but said nothing. "Her mother looks just like her. Have you seen her picture on the news?" Warren nodded again. "Abigail," Will provided. "In the pictures they're showing, she's beautiful, don't you think? Just like Emma." His shoulders went up slowly in a shrug. "She doesn't look like that now, though." Will felt the tension between them almost as if another person was standing there. "She can't sleep. She can't eat. She cries all the time. When she realized that Emma was missing, she had to be sedated. We had to call in a doctor to help her." Warren spoke so quietly that Will had to strain to hear.
"What about Kayla? Is her mom upset?"
"Yeah," Will said. "Not as much, though. She understood that her daughter was not a very nice person. I think she's relieved."
"What about the guy's parents?"
"They're from Oregon. They flew down last night to collect his body."
"Did they take it back?"
"Yes," Will lied. "They took him back home to bury him." Warren surprised him.
"I didn't have parents."
Will forced a smile, conscious that there was a twitch to his lip. "Everybody has parents."
"Mine left me," Warren said. "I don't have anybody."
"Everybody has somebody," Will said. Without warning, Warren dropped to the floor. Will leaned over the counter trying to stop him, but he wasn't fast enough. Warren was on his back, flat to the ground. He held a short-nosed revolver in his hands. The muzzle was a few inches from Will's face.
"Don't do this," Will said. "Hands where I can see them," Warren ordered, wriggling to stand. "I've never used a gun before, but I don't think it matters when you're this close."
Slowly, Will straightened up, keeping his hands in the air.
"Tell me what happened, Warren."
"You're never going to find her.
Did you kill her?
I love her,
Warren said, taking a step back, keeping the gun trained on Will's chest.
That's what you don't understand. I took her because I love her.
Evan just wanted the money, didn't he? He pushed you to take Emma so he could cash in. You never wanted to do it. It was all his idea.
Warren didn't answer. He took another step toward the hall that led to the parking garage.
Emma wasn't his type, right? He likes girls like Kayla, the ones who fight back.
Warren kept inching toward the exit. Will's words came out in a rush.
I grew up in care, too, Warren. I know what it's like on visiting days, sitting there, waiting for someone to pick you. It's not about having a place to live, it's about having someone there who looks at you and really sees you and wants you to belong to them. I know you felt like that when you saw Emma, that you wanted to...
Warren put his finger to his lips, the way you would quiet a child. He took another step, then another, and he was gone.
Will vaulted the counter. As he reached the hallway, he saw Warren shouldering open the back door. He pursued the man, bursting through the exit, rounding into the parking lot in time to see Warren slam into a bright red Mini. Will jogged toward the car as Faith got out. Warren was obviously dazed, but adrenaline kicked in as he realized Will was closing in. He stepped on the bumper and jumped clear of the car, making a break for the street.
"It's him!" Will screamed at Faith, bolting over the Mini.
He ran out into the street, furiously searching for any sign of Warren. He spotted the man almost a block down the road and gave chase, his arms pumping, his legs screaming. The afternoon heat was intense, nearly suffocating him as he ran after the younger man. Will gulped hot air and exhaust into his lungs, sweat poured into his eyes. Will saw a red blur in his periphery and realized that Faith was in her car driving against traffic. The Mini bumped furiously up and down as it careened over metal plates in the road. Warren saw Faith, too. He veered off the main road, going down one of the side streets that led into Ansley Park. The younger man was fast, but Will's stride was twice his. He managed to close the gap between them as he took the turn down the side road. Even when Warren ran into the woods, Will was able to make up time. He had always been a marathoner, not a sprinter. Long distances were his passion, endurance the only thing he could offer to any competition. Warren was obviously the opposite. As he maneuvered through the thick woods, he started to lag, and the space between the two men got shorter and shorter. The man kept looking over his shoulder, his mouth gaping open as he gasped for breath. Will was inches from him, close enough to reach out and grab the collar of his shirt. Warren knew this, could obviously feel the heat on the back of his neck. He did the only thing he could. He stopped short. And Will was going so fast that he practically flipped over Warren's head as they both slammed into the ground. Dirt and leaves kicked up as each man scrambled to stand. Will tried to roll over, but his foot was caught in something. He jerked his leg, furiously trying to free himself. Warren seized the advantage, straddling him, pointing the gun at Will's face, and pulling the trigger. Nothing happened. He pulled the trigger again.
"Hold it!"
Faith screamed. She had somehow gotten in front of them. Her body blocked out the sunlight, her hands casting a shadow across Will's face. Her gun was trained squarely between Warren's eyes.
"Drop it, motherfucker, or I will blow your brains back to Peachtree!"
Warren stared up at her. Will couldn't see the man's eyes, but he knew what Warren was looking at. Faith was tall and blonde and pretty. She could be Emma or Kayla or even Abigail Campano. The sun was behind her. Maybe it gave Warren the impression that an angel was standing over him. "Maybe you did what you were told when there was a gun in your face." Warren dropped his weapon. It hit Will's chest, then fell onto the ground. Will put his hand on the revolver as he rolled out from under the man. His leg came free from the vines with a gentle pull. He realized he had stopped breathing. He felt lightheaded and slightly ill.
"You have the right to remain silent,"
Faith said, her handcuffs clicking around Warren's wrist. "You have the right to an attorney."
Will sat up, the dizziness taking over for a few seconds. He held the gun in his hands. Smith & Wesson, classic model 36, 1 7/8, with a blue case. The serial number was gone. Duct tape covered the grip to keep fingerprints from transferring. The weapon had been professionally prepped. He guessed that Adam had bought a gun after all. Will opened the cylinder and turned it upside down. The revolver was designed to hold 5 rounds. 3 bullets fell into the palm of his hand. Will stared at the shiny brass, smelling the scent of powder mixed with oil. If Warren had pulled the trigger one more time, Will would be dead right now. Chapter 19. Faith was struck by how normal she found Warren Greer. He was average-looking, the sort of young man you wouldn't think twice about letting into your house to fix your toilet or check for a gas leak. Considering what had happened to Kayla Alexander and Adam Humphrey, what had most likely been done to Emma Campano, Faith had expected a monster, or at the very least, an arrogant sociopath like Evan Bernard. Instead, she found Warren Greer almost pitiable. His body was thin and wiry. He couldn't make eye contact with her. Sitting in the chair across from her in the interrogation room, his shoulders hunched, his hands clasped low between his knees, he reminded her more of Jeremy that time he'd gotten caught stealing candy from the store than a cold-blooded killer. She cleared her throat and he glanced up at her, shy, as if they were in high school and she was the cheerleader who was nice to him when her friends weren't looking. He seemed almost grateful to be sitting across from her. Had she not seen him with her own eyes less than an hour ago, pointing a gun in Will Trent's face, Faith would have laughed at the prospect of this introspective, awkward man being capable of such a thing. Faith had only drawn her gun twice in her career. It was not a thing a police officer did lightly. You did not pull your weapon unless you were ready to use it, and there were a finite number of circumstances that justified that happening. Standing there in the woods, looking down at Warren Greer, watching his finger pull back on the trigger, she had been fully prepared to pull back her own finger. But it would have been too late. Faith had been following procedure. She could have safely told any review panel that she was doing the job as she had been trained to do. You give a warning first, then you shoot. Faith knew now that she would never again give that warning. Warren had already pulled the trigger twice by the time she got there. The only thing that had kept him from pulling it a third time, sending the firing pin into the back of a bullet, the bullet through the back of Will's brain, was... what? She felt a rush of heat just thinking about the close call. Faith had to remind herself that the irrational side of Warren Greer was the one that they needed to keep in mind at all times. Evan Bernard was the cool and collected one. Warren was the reactionary, the person who was capable of a frenzied murder. He had abducted Emma Campano. He had stabbed Adam Humphrey. He had beaten Kayla Alexander to death.
This ends Disc 9. Fractured, Disc 10.
Faith realized that over the last 12 hours, she had allowed herself to think that Emma Campana was probably dead. Now, she found herself coming to terms with the possibility that Emma was still alive, and that the only way to find her was through the killer sitting on the other side of the table. She hoped to God that Will was up to the challenge. Warren said, "The construction guys say that the water main should be fixed soon. That'll be nice to have the street clear, finally." Faith turned slightly in her chair, facing away from him. There was a camera on a tripod at the head of the table, their every movement being recorded. She thought about Evan Bernard's little girl room, and wondered if Warren Greer had sat in front of the computer next door, watching him. They hadn't found a hard drive in the man's apartment. They hadn't found a laptop computer or anything remotely incriminating. "They sure were busy this afternoon," he said. "It was very noisy." She felt her pity seep away, her disgust take hold. According to Lionel Petty, Warren spent a lot of time in his office with the door closed. Had he watched Emma and Adam in the parking lot on the security monitor? Is that when he'd first spotted Emma? How did Kayla fit into all of this? Where did Evan Bernard come in? Faith had been processing Warren through the system, watching him get photographed and fingerprinted and searched. Will had told her about Warren's dingy apartment on Ashby Street downtown. It was a one-room affair with a toilet down the hall, the sort of place you moved into when you just got out of jail. Warren's landlady was shocked to hear that her quiet tenant of 10 years had been arrested. He never went out except for work, she had told Will. He never had friends around. So where was he keeping Emma Campano? As if he could read her mind, Warren said, "You won't find her." Faith didn't respond, didn't try to read any sense of hope in his words. Warren had tried several times to engage her in conversation. She had taken the bait the first few times, but quickly learned that he was playing her. He wanted to talk about the weather, the news story about the drought, anything to engage her in meaningless conversation. Faith had learned a long time ago that you never gave suspects what they wanted. It put the relationship on the wrong foot if they thought that they were the ones in control. There was a knock at the door, then Will came into the room. He had several neon-colored file folders in his hand. He nodded at Faith as he checked the camera, making sure everything was working properly. Warren said, "I'm sorry I tried to kill you." Will smiled at him. "I'm glad you didn't succeed." It showed remarkable restraint, and Faith was again struck by how very little Will Trent acted like a cop. He straightened his vest, making sure his tie was tightly tucked in, as he sat down beside Faith. The man looked more like an accountant who was about to start an audit than a cop. Will told Warren, "Your fingerprint matches the note that was slipped under Adam Humphrey's door last week." Warren nodded his head once. He stayed hunched over the table, his hands between his knees. His chest was pressed into the metal top the way babies do when they're trying to stand. Will asked, "Did you try to warn Adam away?" Warren gave a single nod again. "May I tell you what I think happened?" He seemed to be waiting for just that. "I think that you planned this out well ahead of time. Evan Bernard needed money to pursue his legal case against Georgia Tech. He lost his pension, his retirement benefits, everything." Will told Faith, "We found out that he sold his house last summer to pay his legal bills." He shook his head, indicating they had checked the house and found nothing. Faith wondered what other information he had unearthed while she had been sitting on Warren. She glanced at the colored file folders, and Will gave her an uncharacteristic wink. Warren asked, "Did you get adopted out?" Faith didn't understand the question, but Will obviously did. "No," he answered. "I left when I was 18. Warren smiled, a kindred spirit. "Me too." "Did you meet Bernard when you got fostered out? Did he teach at your school?" Warren's face was placid. "I think that Evan Bernard introduced you to Kayla Alexander. He needed Kayla to open the front door for you to make sure that Emma was at home. Maybe she was supposed to keep Adam calm while you took her away." Warren did not confirm anything. "Was Kayla the one who told Emma to start parking in the garage?" Warren said, "Kayla told Emma to park there last year so her parents wouldn't find out they were skipping." "Let's go back 3 days ago, the day of the crime. Did you use the path in the woods behind the copyright to walk to the Campanos?"
"Yes."
"Did you have the knife and the gloves with you?"
"Yes."
"So you went there intending to kill somebody?" He hesitated, then shrugged in answer. Will thumbed through the files in his hand and opened the green one. "We found this in your desk at the copy center." He showed Faith the photograph before sliding it toward Warren. The picture showed Emma Campano walking with Adam Humphrey. The two teenagers had their arms around each other. Emma's head was tilted back as she laughed. Will said, "You liked watching her." Warren didn't respond, but then Will hadn't really asked a question. "Did you think that Adam wasn't good enough for her?" He remained silent. "You knew Emma was special. Who told you she had a reading problem like you?" I don't have a reading problem. His tone was defensive, a radical change from the conversational manner he had adopted before. Will opened another folder, this one blue, and showed Faith an official-looking form. This is an evaluation from a clinical psychologist who interviewed Warren when he was released from the state's care. Will put the sheet of paper down on the table, turning it toward Warren. Faith saw that there were colored dots on the page. Will put his finger on the blue one. Antisocial, he read, moving down to the red dot. Sociopathic tendencies. He moved his finger down to the next dot, then the next, calling out, anger control issues, poor aptitude, poor reading skills. Do you see this, Warren? Do you see what they said about you? He paused, though obviously he didn't expect an answer. Will tucked the form back into the folder, and the tone of the interview suddenly changed when he said, "Well, I guess it doesn't matter if you can see it because it clearly says that you can't read it." Pain flashed in the other man's eyes, as if he had been betrayed. Will kept chipping away, his tone soft, as if he could be both the good and the bad cop rolled into one. "Is that why you dropped out of school when you were 16? Warren shook his head. "I guess school wasn't that fun since they stuck you with the stupid kids." For Faith's benefit, Will explained, Warren was put into special education classes when he was 15, even though his IQ tested within the normal range. Warren looked down at the table, his eyes still glistening. Will said, "It's kind of sad when the short bus pulls up in front of the orphanage." Warren cleared his throat, struggling to speak. "You're never going to find her. And you're never going to see her again." "I have her. Up here," he insisted, pressing his finger to his temple. "I have her with me all the time." "I know she's alive," Will said, sounding so certain of himself that Faith almost believed him. "You wouldn't kill her, Warren. She's special to you. She loves me." "She's terrified of you." He shook his head. "She understands why I had to do it. I had to save her." "What does she understand?" "That I'm protecting her." "Protecting her from Bernard?" He shook his head, biting his lip, refusing to give up the teacher. Will opened a red file folder and took out yet another sheet of paper, which he slid Warren's way. "It is my opinion that Warren Greer has an undiagnosed reading and written language disability. This, combined with his average IQ and antisocial behavior..." Warren whispered, "She's going to die, and it's all going to be on you." "I'm not the one who took her from her family. I'm not the one who killed her best friend."
"Kayla wasn't a friend," Warren said. "She hated her. She couldn't stand her."
"Why?"
"Kayla made fun of her all the time," Warren said. "She said she was stupid because she had to have special help after school."
"Was Kayla mean to you, too?"
He shrugged. But the answer to that question was lying dead down in the morgue right now.
"Tell me what happened that day, Warren. Did Kayla let you into the house?"
"She was just supposed to let me into the house and shut up. But she wouldn't stop. She was pissed about Adam, that he was upstairs having sex with Emma. She kept going on and on about how stupid Emma is and how she doesn't deserve to have a boyfriend. She said Emma is stupid like me."
"Did Kayla start yelling?"
"When I hit her," Warren amended. "Not hard, though. Only to get her to shut up."
"Then what happened?"
"She ran up the stairs. She kept screaming. I told her to stop, but she wouldn't. She was supposed to help with Adam. I was supposed to hold the knife to her neck so he wouldn't try anything. But she just went crazy. I had to hit her."
"Did you stab Kayla?"
"I don't know. I don't remember. I just felt someone grab my hand, and it was him, it was Adam. I didn't mean to hurt him. I just stood up, and the knife went into his chest. I didn't want to hurt him. I tried to help him. I tried to warn him to go away.
Where was Emma when all of this was happening?
I heard her crying.
She was in the closet, in one of the rooms. She had... His voice caught.
The room was so nice, you know. It had a big TV and a fireplace and all these clothes and shoes and everything. She had everything.
Did you hit her?
I wouldn't hurt her.
But she was unconscious when you carried her down the stairs.
We went outside. I don't know what was wrong with her. I carried her. I put her in the trunk. Then I went to the parking garage like I was supposed to.
Like Bernard told you to?
He looked back at the table again. And Faith wondered what kind of hold Evan Bernard had over the young man. For all appearances, Bernard preferred girls. Was there another side to his depravity that they had yet to find out about? Will asked,
"Where did you take her, Warren? Where did you take Emma?"
"Somewhere safe," he said. "Somewhere we could be together."
"You don't love her, Warren. You don't kidnap somebody if you love them. They come to you. They choose you, not the other way around."
"It wasn't like that. She said she loved me."
"After you took her?"
"Yeah."
He had a grin on his face, as if the news still surprised and astounded him.
"She really fell in love with me."
"You really think that?" Will asked. "You really think you belong in her world?"
"She loves me. She told me."
Will leaned closer.
"Guys like you and me, we don't know what it means to be in a family. We don't see how deep that bond is. We never feel how much parents love their children. You broke that bond, Warren. You took Emma away from her parents, just like you were taken away from yours."
Warren still shook his head, but with sadness more than certainty.
"What was that like for you, being in her room, seeing the good kind of life she had when you had nothing?"
His voice was low, confidential.
"It all felt wrong, didn't it? I was there, man. I felt it too. We don't belong around normal people like that. They can't take our nightmares. They don't understand why we hate Christmas and birthdays, and summer vacations, because every holiday reminds us of all the time we spent alone." "No,"
Warren shook his head, vehement. "I'm not alone now. I have her."
"What do you picture for yourself, Warren? Some kind of domestic scene, where you come home from work and Emma's cooking you dinner? She'll kiss you on the forehead and you'll drink some wine and talk about your day? Maybe after she'll wash the plates and you'll dry?"
Warren shrugged, but Faith could tell that was exactly the sort of life the man envisioned.
"I saw your booking photos when they arrested you downstairs. I know what cigarette burns look like."
He whispered a quiet, "Fuck you."
"Did you show your burns to Emma? Did she get sick the same way you do every time you see them?"
"It's not like that."
"She had to feel the scars, Warren. I know you took your clothes off. I know you wanted to feel her skin against yours."
"No."
"I don't know which is worse, the pain or the smell. First, it's like little needles digging into you, a million at a time, just burning and stinging. And then the smell hits you. It's like barbecue, isn't it? You smell it in the summer all over the city, that raw flesh burning in the flames."
"I told you, we love each other."
Will's tone was almost playful, as if he was giving the wind-up for a joke. "You ever feel your skin in the shower sometimes, Warren? You're soaping up and your hand goes to your ribs and you feel the little holes that were burned into your flesh?"
"That doesn't happen. They're like little suction cups when they're wet, right? You put your finger in them and you feel yourself get trapped all over again."
He shook his head.
"Did you beg for it to be over? Screaming like a pussy because it hurt so bad? You told them you'd do anything, right? Anything to make the pain stop. Nobody hurt me like that."
Will's tone got harder. His words came faster.
You feel those scars, and it makes you so angry. You want to take it out on someone, maybe Emma, with her perfect life, and her rich daddy, and her beautiful mother who has to have a doctor come knock her out because she can't bear the thought of being without her precious little girl. Stop it! Will slammed his hand against the table. They all jumped. She doesn't belong to you, Warren. Tell me.